You can cut me off here anytime before I make an idiot of myself.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episodes are Season 10, Episode 9, Family Tree, and Episode 10, What's in a Name? And now here are your two hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. Hey, before we start, I just want to reiterate some site business, which is please start using againwiththis90210.com as your canonical website for all things Again With This, as we will stop publishing synopses and links and stuff on previously.tv relatively soon whenever you hear this. Thank you. And now on with the show.
Also, just a reminder that the next Again With This episode you will hear will concern the Melrose Plays pilot.
I'm rubbing my hands together. You can't hear it, but I am. Hi, shall we get into it?
Yes.
All right, starting with our C-plot. Steve and Janet honeymoon stuff gets dark. Steve schmoops into the honeymoon suite at some shitty-looking resort with a tray of breakfast, which is when we see Janet has not been able to extricate herself from her wedding dress yet because Steve broke the zipper. He offers to tear her out of it, but she notes that their daughter might wear it one day, and Steve's like, a maternity gown? And she's like, maybe, and she laughs and is cool Janet again for a second, which I thought was sweet. The old free spirit Janet doesn't care if their daughter is knocked up on her wedding day.
Exactly.
Cool. She wants to wait for the hotel seamstress, to come see what she can do. Steve feels bad, but Janet thinks they had a perfect wedding, and Steve agrees he wouldn't change a thing. She looks forward to their dotage when she can remind him of the time he was so into her he wanted to rip her dress off, and he claims he will always be that into her, and it's probably not true, but it's cute. Later, a shirtless and satin pajama-panted Steve is lighting the unbelievably ornate fireplace you can see in the visual aids when Janet, freed of her gown, appears in her bridal lingerie. He wants to start things off with a foot rub. He got them a smoky scented candle to remind them of the camping trip where they got together, but then the smoke alarm goes off because he didn't open the flue. So then Janet and Steve have been moved into a shittier room. She wants to go somewhere more romantic, and then very loud polka music starts. There's a whole accordion band in the hallway practicing for the national championships, but they'll go do it in their room right next door to the bride and groom's. And then the twin bed Janet is sitting on breaks. Steve comes back to the room the next day, not having checked them out as she requested, but with an armload of non-smoky candles. The band won their championship, and to thank Janet and Steve, they play a waltz through the wall. Okay, that was a little bit funny. Back in town, Donna and Kelly have bought Steve and Janet a family tree maker on which genealogy is spelled wrong, as you can see in the visual aids. O-L-O-G-Y instead of the correct A-L-O-G-Y. Also, we learn that Steve is not as waspy as his name suggests. Clip two.
Find anything? Well, it says right here his grandfather came through Ellis Island, Vladimir Sandowskowitz.
Sure. Beside a pool, Janet lists the things she would ideally want for her labor, which includes Steve singing Lionel Richie to her. He's fine having their labor unplanned, just like everything else in their life. Back in the bad hotel room, Janet's having contractions. Steve flips shit in a predictable sitcom way while Janet stays calm and tells him what to do, like put pants on. And then they're at their hospital, hearing that her water did break, but that there's not much cause to worry, that she's delivering 6 weeks before her due date. For now, they wait. And they're pleasantly chatting when suddenly the entire medical team rushes in to announce that they need to prep Janet for an emergency C-section. The baby's heart rate is a little slower than usual, so they need to deliver it and get it to the NICU just in case, which sounds reasonable when I say it, but the score is extremely over the top for what is not even the middle of a two-parter. Yeah. And they're also saying Steve can't be in surgery with Janet, which I don't think is the case now, but I don't know. Tell us in the comments, I guess. Steve is interrupted in his hallway pacing by the OB, who has a consent, which is Dr. Mrs. Les Moonves, who has a consent form for him to sign to permit a blood transfusion for Janet and his daughter. And Steve is like, daughter. And then she's wheeled past in an incubator before he can really even get a look at her. This baby, which you can see in the visual aids, is very creepy looking. I really hope it's not real because yikes.
I really do think it's one of the early generations of animatronic creamy dolls that show started using, which we famously referred to one on ER as Rex the Wonder Preemie, and that is who is holding the boom mic whenever whenever it peeps, it like peeks into the shot in the visual aids, and we're like, Rex.
Which happens very rarely anymore, or we've just stopped noticing.
Yeah, we may have just stopped noticing. They don't do that many outdoor shots anymore, think, which is why it tended to happen. And also because Brandon is not on the show, and he was very short.
Right, that's true. I suppose by this time they might be on like body mics. That technology might have come along anyway.
Yeah, but yes, there's a Rex the Wonder Preemie, the sound guy, and there he is in real life. But yeah, ooh,
its skull is real big. You can see in the visual aids. Steve isn't getting definitive answers about anything. Everything sounds pretty scary. After commercials, the gang is around in her room. Janet wakes up, and Steve tells her they had a girl. Steve can only say that the girl is going to be okay. Janet doesn't remember anything that happened and cries when Steve tells her she can't see the baby yet. I also don't think that would be the case, but fine.
Agree.
Steve comes out with updates for the gang. Long story short, everyone's still on monitors. Sometime later, they're ready for a trial extubation on the baby. A bunch of possible issues are raised, but no one really believes that Janet and Steve's baby is going to end up being blind. Then Steve and Janet gown up to go look at the baby. They can't touch her because it might jack up her tube, but Steve is confident the baby knows they're there. And in a moment that I kind of love, and I wonder if Jenny Garth had a hand in suggesting, because I think she had had a kid by this point, but she was the only one. Kelly is standing at Janet's bed when Janet says her stomach looks freaky, and Kelly is like, I want to see. I just thought that was so real. That seemed like a very real woman moment. I don't know.
Yeah, and then the corresponding line that Steve's like, whatever, like, women are so different, and Dylan's like, what gave it away? Everything or everything else? Like, it was just, it was cute.
Yeah. Yes, as Sarah said, Dylan's there too. He's brought Janet's computer from the paper, but not a charger. So enjoy that for, I don't know, 40 minutes. It's the 90s. The baby's doing better, and Janet and Steve go to see her. But when we see them next, Janet is suffering, and she and Steve are both irritated at the lack of continuity of the baby's care as residents come on and off their shifts. And the next day, the baby's doing better, but still in the NICU. Noah and Donna watch as Janet and Steve go in, since only parents are permitted. The doctor comes in and tells them they have to go outside while the baby is extubated. And then Janet tells Steve she wants to name the baby Madeline, which means Tower of Strength. And finally, the gang all take over a waiting room and lay out Thanksgiving food they've brought for Janet and Steve. The procedure is done. A specialist is keeping an eye on the baby. Steve would like to say a prayer of thanks. Janet isn't hungry and goes to take a walk with Kelly. Shortly afterward, a doctor comes in to tell Steve his wife needs him in the ICU, and he takes off in a panic, only to find Janet in a chair holding the baby, who is doing fine and is also 6 months old at this point, but I'm not complaining because it looks a lot cuter.
Yes. Welcome, Maddie.
Welcome. On to the B-plot. Dylan tries to be Andrew's straight savior, then gets back in between Kelly and Matt. Kelly is sort of in both the B-plot and the A-plot. I broke it up as best I could, so bear with us. Dylan is at the center talking to Andrew's co-director, homophobic Patsy, who has to say she's relieved.
Pardon? Played by, oh my gosh, Janet Carroll is the actor's name. And she actually played Kimberly Shaw's mother. Dr. Marion Shaw. And she played Joel's mother in Risky Business.
Oh, she was also one of either Maura Tierney's or Ben Affleck's mother in Forces of Nature, the movie. I forget which. Anyway, homophobic Patsy has to say she's relieved that Andrew is okay because what happened is so unfortunate, and Dylan has to needle her back by saying Andrew was gay bashed, so unfortunate doesn't really cover it. She briskly tells him to send Andrew her regards, and he needles her some more, saying she should talk to Andrew directly and also give him his job back. She wanted Andrew to continue working there, but claims there was a restructuring that eliminated his job, which just happened to coincide with his coming out of the closet. Dylan offers to make up the alleged shortfall himself, but of course the real issue is that it's unacceptable for a man like that, to quote Patty, to be working with children, including her own. And then it's Dylan's turn to bray in clip 3.
Number one, you can't fire someone based on their sexual orientation. It's illegal. Number two, I don't think I will ever understand how unacceptable it is. And most importantly, number three, so listen to me. If you don't welcome a man like that back here to do his job, with open arms. I will stop funding this place. Maybe it'll be your job they're looking to eliminate.
Ooh. Such a Brandon subplot, truly.
It is, but also, like, again, I do and I don't want them to explain this budget, because now is he the sole funder of the center? Like, presumably they're getting some public dollars, which granted would only support Dylan's case over hers, you know, like, especially in a government job. That's not permitted to fire someone on civil rights grounds, even back then. But also, like, this is why there should be more funding from government, so that particular donors can't be threatening people's jobs, even though she's in the wrong. This is not okay either.
Well, and on top of that, she would know if they were getting government or state of California
funding. Yeah, of course.
Funding,
yeah.
Not to be anywhere close to that explicit about being a bigot.
Of course. Yes. Agree.
And it's fine. Stop funding them then.
Right.
Open yeah. a new center with your apparently unlimited bottomless wings checking account and set Andrew up there and, like, let's get on with our lives instead of trying to give Brandon plots to Dylan.
Yeah. But also, furthermore, like, you know, I almost don't want to say this because it sounds like I'm defending Patsy. Of course I'm not. But I feel like if she has worked in, you know, a social services job for more than 5 minutes, she's familiar with the experience of some rich benefactor, like, jerking them around, basically.
Yeah.
So this would not be an impressive threat, probably.
No.
Still, Andrew and Dylan meet up for drinks so that Dylan can recap this threat that he made. Andrew says he's a private person and doesn't want to be forced to confront Patsy or her prejudice. He would rather just walk away. But Dylan doesn't want to give his money to a bigot. So Andrew does return to coaching at the center after all. Henry, Patsy's son, shows up and Andrew introduces him to Dylan. Henry is an amazing basketball player, but he won't be in the tournament tomorrow because Patsy says Andrew shouldn't have come back and she won't let him play for a gay coach. Dylan tries to say that quitting is Henry's loss, but it's exactly what Andrew didn't want to happen. Patsy comes out then and Dylan threatens her some more in clip 4.
Hey, lady, I meant what I said. You got a sad attitude, and I will not underwrite that.
Well, that's your decision to make. We may do before you, and we will survive after you've gone, with our values intact.
Those values don't include sending your kid to acting class, I will just note. Henry makes Vincent Young look like Olivier.
Yeah.
Not good.
But also, like, not to say people can't be, like, bigoted in various, you know, buckets of prejudice, but it does seem weird that someone who has this attitude about gay people would have chosen a career in which most of her clients are probably not white. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Moving on, Andrew is freaking out about letting Dylan talk him into coming back to the center because he's lost 8 kids from the team in 2 days. Dylan is an idiot in clip 5.
So what? There's no basketball. The kids who quit, they don't deserve it.
No, these kids deserve everything we can give them.
Then you give them a sense of what is right and wrong.
Kids come here from broken homes. Some of them are abused. Almost all of them are poor. My job, the job of this center, is to make their difficult life a little bit easier and a lot more fun.
Does Dylan not get that the kids are being punished for their parents' prejudice? Like, these aren't the kids saying, I don't want to be on a gay guy's team.
Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway. So Andrew opens Patsy's door and quits on the spot. She comes out after him and actually looks a little bit chastened. Almost. So then later, Henry is shooting baskets when Dylan, an adult man he has met one time, appears and starts lecturing him about Andrew. Dylan tries to get Henry to remember he thought Andrew was a good coach before his mother got him all gay panicky and makes him feel guilty about Andrew feeling like he had to quit and urges Henry to defy his parents and think for himself. So then Dylan is walking Andrew and his box of stuff out to the car. Andrew doesn't know what he's going to do next other than try to convince Dylan to keep funding the center. But then Henry is there to say he wants Andrew to stay, and so do all the other guys on the team, thanks to Dylan's advice about free thinking.
And then he does that thing where he's like, we got a game to play. And then throws the ball at the coach. And he's like, great. So bad. So Davy and Goliath. I couldn't even deal with it.
Yeah. Well, that's it for basketball talk. Now, Kelly's at the Peach Pit when Dylan comes in to coordinate Thanksgiving turkeys for client families at the Center Center. And even though she's impressed that he's taking this initiative without having to be roped into it, she is impressed with a bitch face that you can see in the visual aids. At the hospital, Kelly tells Dylan how useless she feels to help any of the people in her life, from Janet and Steve's baby to Aaron, whom we will get to. And Dylan tries again to make her help him at the Center Center. When she says she doesn't have the energy, he says people are hungry, you feed them, you feel good, and this appeal to her self-interest actually works. And when we see them next, they're at the Peach Pit at night, goofing off while prepping food. The one time it would be appropriate for her to have her hair up, even in a stupid style, Kelly is mashing potatoes with all her hair hanging down.
Mm. Also, the turkey stuffing process is making some really inappropriate fapping noises that you will not be able to hear in the aural aids because we don't have those. And also, I died of vicarious embarrassment. It was gross.
So Kelly says she needs to call Matt and asks Dylan for his phone since she left hers in her car. And he has to make it weird by asking if she and Matt ever laugh like this, even though he saw them laugh like this like two episodes ago through the window when they were having Chinese food, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He also then runs his hand through his hair despite having just been wrist deep in a turkey. And then he licks his fingers.
And then he uses them to put her hair behind her ear.
Ugh.
This is not how anything works.
No. So he brings up how much Gina hated Kelly, to which Kelly says she was no threat to Gina since she is with Matt, and then recaps all the ways Dylan is currently getting his life on track, and further recaps Gina and David hooking up the same night Dylan admitted that he'd shown up for and subsequently walked out on Kelly's wedding. And instead of answering that, he finally gives her his phone. And when he walks her back to her door, Matt is there. Matt politely greets him like a normal person, and Dylan makes a dumb face you can see in the visual aids and says nothing, like a baby. We also see when Kelly enters the apartment that she's in open-toed platform slides, which it's the end of November. No. And apparently what Matt has been doing in her absence is preparing their Thanksgiving meal. She says she and Dylan spent the day doing the same thing, but is saved from elaborating when the phone rings. It is Jackie. She's going to help at the center as well and bring Aaron. Dylan and Matt go outside where Dylan tells Matt about the center dinner and tries to get Matt to help too. Matt then calls Dylan out for finally showing signs he's serious about Kelly. And sure enough, the next day, Dylan shows up at the Peach Pit and commences flaking in clip six.
I got a cargo van, so everything should be set.
Okay, good. We'll just start loading everything up.
I was thinking that you need to sort of lead the charge on that, because my mom's sister, Lily, she's at LAX. She has a really big layover. I got to go down there.
You're kidding me, right? You never talked about an Aunt Lily before.
I never had any reason to.
So we're just supposed to finish up all of your work.
Nat can take over, and there's volunteers at the center.
Your volunteers. Your project, Dylan. My family did this for you as a favor. With everything that's going on, we really don't need any added stress right now.
What can I say, Kel?
Nothing that I would want to hear right now.
I'm gonna be late.
Then you better go. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is, because why is this happening?
Yeah, suddenly now he cares about Matt, because Matt noticed that he cares about Kelly. Like, this is all they've been doing since last season.
Yeah.
Whatever. In his absence, Kelly and Matt schmoop it up at the center dinner. And later, Matt calls Dylan on the Aunt Lily story, since he did Dylan's will 6 months ago. Of course he did. Between death penalty appeals. And he knows Dylan doesn't have an Aunt Lily, and Dylan suggests that maybe he just doesn't like Aunt Lily enough to give her any of his money. And Matt says maybe, or maybe Matt should thank Aunt Lily because it made Dylan stay away from Kelly this particular day. I don't know. It's dumb. Lather, rinse, repeat. Exactly. On to the A-plot, Mel and Jackie's breakup implicates almost everyone. So, as we mentioned a couple of episodes ago, Matt has pivoted from a death penalty case to Jack and Mel's second quasi-divorce. Kelly comes out of the store on the end of it, on the end of Jackie looking fab, which you can see in the visual aids, while ranting kind of hysterically in clip seven.
And I'll get what I want?
Well, from what you told me, you have a very good case.
Mel is a liar. and a cheat. I want that in the filing.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, it's great. We're going to crucify him. Hey, great sweater. I think Mel should buy me one. Or four.
That's a spirit.
Yeah. She really looks great. Sometimes they put her in colors that wash her out, but she's in like a bright, light purple top with a colorful scarf, and her hair is a little bit longer on the sides. She looks amazing.
Yeah, she does. I wish they would lighten the hair a little bit. It's a mm-hmm. little bit Conrad
it's a little yellow.
All the same, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So when Jackie's in the store, we learn that Kelly has stopped blaming Noah for the stripper parties and now blames Gina. And apparently this is not the first time Matt has heard it, because he wearily says he's not firing Gina, but will make sure she's never in the office when Jackie's there. Regardless, this is not Gina's fault, he says. Well, it isn't, it isn't. But anyway, Jackie has also absolved Noah of responsibility, saying he just made a mistake, but Gina was hurtful. Oh, this is some misogynistic bullshit, Jackie. Come on now. They are equally to blame, really. I mean, blackmail aside, whatever. If she has said that only Gina is being hurtful, I'm not sure why she and Mel are breaking up. But anyway, Jackie then brings up the blackmail, which is the first Donna and Kelly have heard of it. And Kelly is even more furious. There are many, many bitch faces at this point. You can see the visual aids. At the hotel, Gina and David are talking about how great and imaginative the previous night was. Except then she says Steve and Janet really outdid themselves, and David is like, the wedding was great too. Oh God, both of you go away forever. But she eats it up. Ugh. You can see Vanessa Marsil is so in love with Brian Austin Green. It is really heartbreaking to see.
Yeah, especially given the photos of him in the visual aids, which he just looks like a cartoon.
So bad. David claims never to have thought about sleeping with Gina before that night. Like, what? Including when you were sleeping in the same bed in the season 9 finale?
Canoodling?
Yeah. But now he's eager to define their relationship and keep sleeping together forever while Gina's face falls. She wants to play things by ear and he'll allow it. But they have a brief and appropriate kiss goodbye before she gets in the elevator looking anxious. Kelly and Donna have brought Aaron to a park to throw popcorn at ducks when David shows up. Kelly bitch faces at him. Donna takes Aaron for a walk so that Kelly can tell David about the blackmail. And he says that A, he doesn't believe it, but also B, it doesn't matter which is it? It can't be both.
Yeah. Like it kind of does.
Right.
Kind of matters.
Yeah. Kelly and Donna are talking about wedding presents and whether Erin is appropriately emotional about her parents' breakup when they enter the beach apartment living room and see Matt and Noah playing a video game and snit about it boringly. But do you want to talk about how endearing Matt is in this scene?
Oh, my God. He's so cute. Like, they're on the floor playing video games and Matt is seated in this like one. He's sort of like half squatting, but then half one like tucked under him and one up in front of him. And it is this very true to kid way of sitting.
Yeah.
That is totally how my nephew sits to play video games. It's how I sat to play video games. It's like not, it's like half legs crossed and half knees up. And
yeah.
It's so cute. And then he looks really, he's looking really intently at the video game and looks about 12, and it's adorable.
It really is cute. He's got his shirt untucked and like, yeah, his arms are wrapped around the knee that's up in front of him. It's super cute. You can see it in the visual aids.
Yeah.
It turns out Kelly is also still opposed to Noah now because he's taking up too much space in the apartment. So then Dylan at the hotel runs into Gina at the elevator. He wants to talk, but she thinks his statement that they don't have a future together is a fine place to leave things. Oh, my God. Finally. And then David slouches into frame looking like a fucking idiot. You can see that in the visual aids, too. I also think his shirt is buttoned wrong in the scene. You can make a judgment when
too.
You see me. Dylan tries to get rid of David, but he says he's there to see Gina, and Gina tells Dylan she thinks they're done, but they don't really look that happy in the elevator, Gina and David, that is. And then as soon as the doors close, Dylan is like, I don't think so, to himself, and it's very dumb and soapy. In the elevator, David very gingerly brings up Kelly's accusation. When Gina deflects, he gets specific about the blackmail, but Gina dismisses that as Kelly looking for someone to blame on Jackie's behalf. David is like, so it's not true. And Gina says that Mel came to the club and she snuck him out, which is accurate, but also obviously not the whole story.
Yep.
Yep. But it's good enough for David, who just wants to fuck her. And she acts like he's bringing it up because he wants to get out of whatever they're doing. But he cheerfully agrees to drop it forever. And Kelly is grossed out to walk into the bathroom in the morning and find in it a naked Noah who didn't lock the door. And in Gina's room, they're somehow back to talking about Mel. David says he shouldn't have doubted Gina. She asks him not to talk to Kelly because it'll only make things worse. And he's leaving when he runs into Dylan coming out of the elevator on his way to see Gina. They have a conversation in her doorway about whose fault it is that she's fooling around with David now, but neither of them is really all that head up about it, honestly. And then Mel tells a still hysterical Jackie that she has sole custody of Aaron for now, but in terms of the assets, the fact that she and Mel aren't married means they're kind of in a gray area. She cries that when she and Mel got back together, she made him promise he wouldn't put her through this again, and Matt nicely assures her that she did the right thing, reuniting for Aaron's sake. And then in the store, Kelly is letting Aaron play dress up slash giving her a very awful makeover. You can see in the visual aids, it's like four kinds of animal print and like a quilted purse. And it's very kinder whore, but except she's actually a kid. So it's very inappropriate.
Well, how old is Aaron supposed to be, according to the show? At this point?
Well, she was
like
born
seven
in
and a half or eight.
She was born at the beginning, like basically between season two and season three, right? That was 93. So at this point, she's six.
I mean, the kid looks about 10, which is a problem. And then they talk to her like she's three. I guess that's just like TV does not know how to deal with any kid between the ages of 3 and 15. So,
yeah. So Noah and Donna have brought Steve and Janet, a genealogy CD-ROM set, as we've heard, and Kelly has just gotten in on it when David shows up, even pissier than usual, in clip 8.
I mean, I know you guys stop at nothing when it comes to someone you like. And as far as someone you don't.
If this is about Gina, I really don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, it is about Gina. You know what? She had nothing to do with telling Jackie about Mel.
And this news broadcast came from...
From Gina? My girlfriend?
Wait, you and Gina? Still
Canadian. You don't
okay,
know her.
Your girlfriend is responsible for breaking up my mom's family. And if you don't believe me or my mom, why don't you talk to your dad? Until then, don't defend that bitch to me, okay?
So that's the sad dressing room curtain of Aaron reminding everyone she's there and can hear all of this, and they really need to shut up because she's a kid.
Yeah, for real.
So Gina comes to David's all flirty to say she told Dylan about them, but now David is being pissy at her because he confirmed Kelly's charge with Mel. She begs him to let her explain, but he slams the door in her face. And under duress, Kelly admits to Donna that she's annoyed to have to sleep at Matt's because of Noah. She realizes when Donna points it out that she is kind of being a bitch about it and pulls back, but it doesn't last when she sees Gina show up on her way to Matt's office, and we hear this, clip 9.
How dare you show up here? I work here. Not for long if I have anything to do with it. You know what, Kelly? I didn't do anything to Mel, okay? Or David or Dylan that they didn't want done to them. It's not my fault all the men in this town are unsatisfied.
Not totally untrue.
True? Yeah, right? Like, where's the lie? I can't find it.
So after dinner that night, Noah picks up and tells Donna how happy he is to be there with her. And she nervously points out that he left the salt and pepper on the table. When he doesn't get what the big deal is that he didn't completely clean up, she tells him what a pill Kelly's being about him. Although that's not the word she uses. And Noah doesn't really care, which fine, fair. At his house, David is reading Aaron a fairy tale from what is clearly a school textbook with no pictures when Dylan shows up to check in clip 10.
We friends.
I've got Aaron here.
It's just a simple question.
Yeah, I think so.
And you can see with the way you've been acting lately why I might be a little unsure.
Is that it? Because I've got an 8-year-old girl in there whose life is falling apart.
One friend to another. You should be careful.
So that's why you came here. Tell me I should be careful. Of Gina?
Mm-hmm. And to let you know that I heard how she played your old man. You two dating must really make Mel proud.
Ooh. I mean, it's true.
Yeah, but it's like you could see David's stupid round face fall, and it's fine with me.
Also, if anyone alive understands being led by your dick, it's probably Mel.
Yeah.
So when he's gone, Erin says she heard that Steve and Janet had a fairy tale wedding. She wants to know if Janet and Mel did too. David dodges, and Erin is no longer interested in fairy tales. Oh no, her innocence. So then Jackie shows up at Mel's office without an appointment to drop off financial statements he had asked for. And since Gina is there and he's been trying to keep them apart, Mel immediately starts shitting a brick. And at first he tries to introduce Gina as his assistant without saying her name, and she plays along. But when she's most of the way out the door, he tells Janet who she is, and Gina handles the situation as badly as we might predict in clip 11.
I'm sorry about what happened, but you should know I think I did you a favor.
By destroying my family?
I think Melvin probably did that all on his own. All I did was tell you his little secret.
Call me after you've looked over the statements.
That was comfortable.
You don't see it, do you?
What?
How rude that was. Gina, I'm letting you go.
Because I'm to blame for all of this?
No, not all of it, but enough.
Well, Kelly will be happy.
This has nothing to do with Kelly. This thing's a mess. Believe me, no one's happy about it.
No, Kelly will be happy about this. She's been angling for this for a while.
Yeah, for like a season. Plus, you know, blackmail's a felony.
Yeah.
So.
That's true.
you can't really keep her once you know that she did that. So.
No, it's true. I mean, especially. Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't thought of that. That
all his death penalty clients will be shocked.
I know, but there's also the possibility that Jackie would like go to the cops and report Gina. Like, you know, that would kind of probably ruin Matt's law practice anyway.
The shame at the apartment, of Hamilton law.
At the apartment, Noah drags Kelly out to look at the very childlike "no girls allowed" sign he's stuck on the door of the spare bedroom. He knows he's been stepping on toes, so he has annexed the room for all his boyish activities. Seems like the nicer thing would be to give her an additional room for whatever she wants to do in it, but fine.
Also, wasn't that the doodlearium?
It was, formerly. Anyway, that's where the PlayStation is now. Donna and Erin are in there playing and having fun, and Kelly is mollified. And then a tearful Gina shows up on David's doorstep, and he is real emo about it in clip
12. Oh, he's so emo!
I don't want to get hurt.
I just came over to tell you that I think we could be great together.
You know, so far, being hurt by you has redefined my life twice in less than 6 months.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, I'm really trying to ignore it.
I'm not gonna hurt you.
Again. I really hope the operative word is again.
Okay. Whatever.
Do you know, you don't understand what hope or operative means according to that sentence? You also don't understand what a mirror is because your hair is ridiculous.
So dumb. And of course, he lets her in because boner.
He wants to fuck her. Yeah.
Yeah. Erin is curled up pouting in Kelly's bed when Kelly, oblivious, comes in with an apple and offers to show her the trick of using the stem to figure out your future spouse's initials. And finally notices that Erin is crying when she turns around and says she wants her parents to live happily ever after. Oh. Speaking of families, Donna is family treeing, not happily, in clip 13.
This can't be right.
What's that?
These records indicate that my father had two children.
Your father, not your mother. Was he married before?
No. According to this birth certificate, he had an affair with my Aunt Bobby.
Wait a second. You're telling me that...
Yeah. If this is true, Gina and I are sisters.
Dun, dun, dun!
Yeah. In addition to spelling the word genealogy incorrectly in the genealogy program, like Bobby's name is Bobby. Name of mother, yeah. Bobby, Gina, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. not Roberta? And mm-hmm. her middle name is Gina? Like,
eh? Yeah, what family named one child Felice and the other child Bobby?
Bobby. I don't think so.
No. So then the next day at the Peach Pit, Aaron's off with Nat. Kelly asks Matt not to let Aaron's parents use her as ammunition against each other. Yeah, good luck with that. Hey, is there ever going to be a conversation about Noah inventing a dancer named Trina just to shut Kelly up? Well, not right now, as Donna and Noah go over to the Martins, strategizing on the stoop about how they're going to separate her parents so that Donna can ask her dad about Gina's parentage. Which is when Gina herself opens the door with an apron on. I refuse to believe that Felice is cooking her own Thanksgiving dinner. Sorry. No. But anyway, the conversation continues in clip 14.
Now, Gina, what was it we were going to do next? It was a half a cup of orange rinds?
Oh, is it your mom's recipe?
No, it's my dad's. Actually, my dad used to let me eat this big blob of it on a piece of toast for Thanksgiving. He was really cool like that.
He sounds great.
He's the best. Want to taste it?
Yeah, sure. Why not? She really seems to idolize the old man, you know?
Yeah, if he was her dad at all.
Not how social parenting works.
Nope. Does not. You. So then Kelly is looking after Aaron at the store when Jackie comes down to rant some more in clip 15.
Well, Matt and I just got off the phone with the barracuda that Mel has hired to represent him. No surprise to me that he's haggling over child support. I'm sure all of Mel's money is inside the G-string of that lap dancer.
Mom.
Aaron is sitting right there.
Well, I'm sorry, Aaron. But that's the way it is.
Okay, two things. First, this is Aaron's first bitch face, so it's a proud moment for us all. You can see that in the visual aids. But second, you're really never too young to learn that men are trash. Sorry.
Yeah. And this sort of tracks with the Jackie that we first met in the Fashion yes. Show episode, having just reviewed yes. that.
Yep.
For the book that she's just like, well, I'm so... I mean, granted, she was drunk and... She was in a microwave in the bedroom tower.
Yeah.
Hashtag never forget. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I just feel like these are Beverly Hills kids, and I'm pretty sure Aaron wouldn't even notice this at this point, but.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true.
Why lose an opportunity for Kelly to be a self-righteous haggala about it?
Indeed. So after Gina has left the Martins, Felice shades her cranberry sauce and cooking skills generally, and Donna, waiting around for her dad to get home from golf, defends Gina. When Dr. Martin does show up, Noah steers Felice away so that Donna can probe for info in clip 16.
Dad, did you know Gina was spending Thanksgiving with us?
Yeah, your mother invited her.
Mom, not you.
Well, your mother's always been closer to her.
Dad, this is going to sound completely crazy. I bought this software that traces family trees, and, well, your name came up as Gina's father. It's a mistake, right?
No. No, it's not.
So what, you were Gina's guardian or something?
See, I can explain. It was just all so long ago.
Dad, shh. Mom's gonna hear.
Honey, your mother knows.
Oh, Mom knows?
Of course.
Does Gina know too?
No.
So, wait, you and Mom and Aunt Bobby just all got together and decided to change Gina's life forever just to suit yourselves? And then you lied to me my entire life? Can you explain all that?
Use a cup of tea. Anybody else?
Just get me out of here.
Donna knows about Gina.
The actor like just laboring through this stupid retcon that he's being put through is so funny. Also, it's very annoying to me that Saint Donna's first instinct is to be like, I can't believe how this affected Gina. Like, just for once, could you be selfish about finding this information?
Oh, it gets so much stupider. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it really does.
I mean, yeah, well, we'll get to it. So the next day, Donna's still in distress, not knowing how either she or Gina can ever forgive her parents. And when David comes in to the Peach Pit, she gets all breathy voiced about how weird it is that after the two of them were together for so long, now David's with her cousin. David irritably says he knows Donna doesn't like Gina, but would appreciate her being happy for him. Why? Again, just another instance where the show is like, you guys should not hang out anymore. Like, this does not need to continue, but whatever.
Yeah.
Donna says she's glad David is there for Gina since she's used to men who aren't. God. So then Dylan brings Gina her usual coffee order, which their room service waiter keeps delivering to his room. She's not exactly thrilled to see him, but she does let him in. We see she's received like 12 dozen roses. No card, but she assumes he sent them since he's the only person she knows who could afford them, which she doesn't deny. And he also tries to lure her to his room with an egg white omelet. And she angrily tells him it's not okay and that she'll be out of the hotel as soon as she can find another place. He wearily tells her to stay as long as she wants because he doesn't care about the money, to which she replies this, clip 17.
You don't care about me.
Not true.
You know what it is? It's the way that you care. You know, with roses and presents and money and stuff that I just don't care about anymore. I mean, have you ever had a real feeling with anyone ever?
I appreciate the offer, but I'm going to have to take a rain check on the breakfast.
Oh, really? Well, I'm so upset about that.
I mean, take the stuff. You're broke.
Yeah. Also, like, whatever. He doesn't care, so...
Yeah.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You've had this conversation. Mm-hmm. I just don't... I guess I don't understand why we had to have this scene.
Mm-mm.
Except so that it could cause conflict between her and David. Like, it's David. He'll find some reason to be a piss face. Like,
yep. He will. So then Donna goes back to her parents' house. And this is how the conversation begins. Clip 18.
So nice of you to grant us a second hearing.
Felice.
I'm sorry I ran out on you guys last night. I love you both very much, and... I do. I want to understand what happened with Gina.
What the fuck? You're sorry?
Yeah. Also,
Felice
this
has the gall to be snotty?
This isn't clipped, but Dr. Martin begins his explanation with, it was the 70s.
Oh, I know. I love it. It's kind of
rules. You could have just stopped there, but yeah. I guess they were running short.
But yeah, this feels like a situation where it's okay for Donna to wait for them to come explain to her rather than go back and be all like supplicant for the story.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was the 70s. Haha. They were at a crazy party. Felice and Dr. Martin had a fight. And four Harvey wallbangers later, Dr. Martin and Bobby were naked in a swimming pool. Tori Spelling for once has Donna make the right face at this, which is grossed out. It wasn't enough for Dr. Martin to throw away his family, and they all thought they did the best they could. Bobby married Donna's uncle Rick, and he was thrilled to be Gina's father. And Donna exposits that Rick died when Gina was five and that Dr. Martin could have taken over as a father figure from there. And Felice is very Felice in response in clip 19.
And we'd introduce her as what? Your cousin and your sister? We'd all sound like trash. So because you were worried what other people would think, you threw away Gina's entire future?
Princess.
I hate it when you call me that.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Also, shut up about Gina's future. You are not an actual saint.
Also, Gina was in the Olympics. Like, Gina may be broke now, but she did okay.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, to Felice is like, well, how would we introduce her? Like, you don't have to say anything. You could say she's Donna's cousin. She's half an orphan. We're rich, so we're helping. Like, this is, it's not complicated. You didn't have to, like, put your whole story on Front Street.
Yeah. It does put Felice at the Bel Age with Color Me Bad in rather a different light, though.
It certainly does.
Mm.
So then David finds Gina arranging some of her roses in Janet's room, apparently regretting having let her into his place the night before. Clip 20.
What are you doing here? I thought you said you couldn't get here until 7.
Oh, my training session got canceled.
Training session? You said you didn't have any clients.
Well, they come in waves.
Oh, okay. Well, then that would explain why Dylan's covering your hotel bill, huh? Well, not that I'm obsessing on you and Dylan living under one roof or anything.
It's a big roof. There's lots of people.
I know. I just... You know, Gina, we talked about this, all right? But, you know, you didn't really answer me. I mean, are you trying to get away from Dylan? Are you trying to get closer to him?
What are you talking about? Of course I answered you. I mean, right now, in this moment, I hate Dylan's guts, and I'm trying to get to the point where I don't feel anything about him. You want to let me finish my sentence?
Seriously.
It's a hotel, like, under one roof. It's not like they're at a fucking bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Also, you know, she had fucked him the day before she fucked you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe if you weren't thinking with little Lord Pissface, you would have thought through the implications of this. Well, sorry.
No, you're not.
No, I'm really not. Lord Cheeseface.
Gross.
That I am sorry for. Sorry. I'm fired.
You're not. You're not sorry about that either. My butt. But they leave it with an exchange about David noting her preference in roses and her being touched that he's paying attention before she asks if he can stay at his place that night. Although I'll just say, you know, if Dylan got her rose preference right, then he was paying attention a little bit too. I'm not saying that she should go back with him, obviously, but just saying.
Yeah.
So the next day, David brings Gina a pink rose bush, sees the room full of pink roses, figures out why she didn't want him to stay there, and gets pissed that she didn't call housekeeping to throw the roses all out. She babbles that they can throw the roses out and smash the vases together, and reminds him that she told him she'd need some time to get over Dylan. He says it's different now than it was at the beginning, the day before yesterday. She wants to be with him, but if he can't be patient with her, maybe they should just quit, but that's not what he wants. She loves her rosebush. She wants to take her back to his place and plant it. So then Donna uses a visit to the baby to wonder pointlessly about whether her dad was around when Gina was born. Probably not, since it was in Colorado. Cough. Mm-hmm. Noah tells her to quit thinking about it, basically, and to come to their Thanksgiving dinner, even though she hates them right now, so they know she's not going to let this drop. This is bad advice from Noah. Everyone needs some distance from each other. I feel. Especially since her parents are like totally unapologetic about perpetrating this lie for her whole life.
Yeah. And you live in a big city. Go to Chinese. It's not a big deal.
Right. Also, it's Thanksgiving, a stupid holiday. Janet and Aaron later fight over a Game Boy on which Aaron is loudly playing some violent game or other, and which she won't put away because it's a bribe gift from Mel. Kelly has to take it. Kelly has to take Jackie aside and tell her to quit shit-talking Mel in front of Aaron. Jackie shoots back that Kelly cleaned up Dylan's messes all through high school, but she did not. Kelly claims that pattern is broken, which is also not the case. Mm-hmm. And at the Martin's Thanksgiving, which doormat Donna is attending, everyone's watching football. Once again, we are treated to exposition about Gina's new alleged hometown of Denver, and when Felice asks why Gina doesn't visit, Donna side-eyes her. Gina smiles uncomfortably and then admits that she doesn't have a job at the moment, but she does have credit card debt. Dr. Martin says if she wants a ticket, they'll get her one. Noah tries to escape by offering to check the turkey, and Felice says she already has before offering her frequent flyer miles. Gina politely says she couldn't. Donna adds that Gina's life is here now, and Gina doesn't seem that psyched for Donna's support. Why would she be?
Really?
Felice insists that Bobby would love to see her, and Donna takes off to pretend to deal with dinner. And Felice follows to order her to calm down, which she will not in clip 21.
2 days ago, you welcomed her into your home, and now you're pushing her out. We're doing no such thing. What, do you have her booked on the next plane flight out of here?
I knew she couldn't handle this.
She's
close
my
to train
sister.
Flights?
I need to give that a chance.
You can't tell her the truth.
And you can't keep controlling other people's lives.
Do you actually think that Gina is going to embrace you when she finds out what she's missed out on? I mean, after she and Bobby have scrambled their entire lives and haven't had anywhere near what we have? I mean, if you think she's going to kick up her heels over this news, you are totally mistaken.
It's too late to change things now.
Happy Thanksgiving. You make me sick.
Soapiest line ever.
Oh, God. I mean,
Happy Thanksgiving to you in jail.
Okay. There's no wrong time for reparations. I'm just saying, like, you know, if the answer, if what you're saying is you're going to tell Gina that she is Dr. Martin's biological child and you're going to, like, cut her in to be an equal recipient of all their largesse with Donna, she'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. She will.
And that's
really all she wants anyway. So,
yep. So Donna stalks out, tells Noah they're eating somewhere else, and tells Gina to come with them. Gina makes a hilarious what the fuck face when she can see the visual aids. The Martins come out and yell at Donna not to leave. Donna tries again to get Gina to come with them, but Gina just sneers that Donna is so spoiled, which is true, but not relevant in this situation. Still true. Erin tries to get Jackie to let her walk to a drugstore alone to get batteries for her Game Boy by saying Mel would let her do it. And Jackie stops herself saying something bad about Mel, instead saying he's a good father and he definitely would not let her go to a drugstore by herself. Jackie nicely says she knows they're having a hard time, but that everyone's doing their best and they love Erin very much. And wouldn't Erin like to call Mel and wish him a happy Thanksgiving? She would. Well, guess Jackie got it back, but whatever damage was done is, you know. In my opinion, fair. Like I said, never too young to learn that men are trash. Speaking of trash men, Gina finds David at the hospital later and tells him she threw all the roses out the hotel window and then got evicted, I assume, for vandalizing the parking lot. David admits that he was being a jerk and she could have kept the flowers, but she doesn't want them. And then Donna asks to speak with Gina in our final clip.
How was dinner?
Well, let's see, after you stormed out, your mom burst into tears and ran upstairs, and your dad jumped in his car and took off.
While we were fighting, I just had to get out of there. I'm really sorry, Gina, if I ruined your Thanksgiving dinner.
Did Aunt Felice ever shove a bucket of chicken in your lap, set you in front of the TV, so she could spend the holiday with her new boyfriend?
No.
Well, that's how I spent most of my Thanksgivings after my father died. That was his favorite holiday. I guess I was just trying to get some of that back, you know? Because I just feel like all my memories of him are just kind of slipping away right now. I gotta go. Are we done here? Yeah, we're done.
You're not done, but we are.
Yay.
Let's wrap it up with our episode MVP. I mean, I hate to do it because he's such a shit, but Dr. Martin, just for it was the 70s.
Oh, and the pain, like, it was the 70s. Like, oh, God. I just had this, like, I wish they'd done a flashback to this, like, ice storm key party.
Yes! Oh, my God, totally.
Maybe they could do that on the reboot.
Oh, amazing. Do you concur or do you have a different MVP?
No, I concur.
All right. Least valuable player.
Bobby and Felice's parents?
Yeah. Kelly. Yeah. I'm going to say Kelly for being a total bitch about everything.
Also fair.
Also for that makeover of Erin. Not a probes.
Yeah, no.
Kim Challenge.
Bad, bad, dangerous to me.
5 ways from this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, continuing from the last episode, trying to tell a gay man how to live when he is straight.
Not using gloves to handle a raw turkey and then running your fingers through your hair and then running your fingers through your ex/future girlfriend's hair and licking your fingers. Gross.
I mean,
bad, dangerous, mad. All of it.
I feel like we can stop right there, but he did do other shitty stuff. Inventing an Aunt Lily to get out of responsibilities you signed yourself up for.
Provided your fortune is not the bottomless wings of TV fortunes. Chill out on the roses. She got it after two or three. You didn't have to fill the room. It's like $3,000 worth of flowers.
It's also bad to like keep sniffing around Gina. You cannot give her what she wants. You have made that clear. She has made it clear what she does want. If you are not in line with this, just stop.
Also, she already fucked David, so she's burnt. Go do something
else. She's suffering enough. Yeah, that makes five.
Next time on Again With This, it's the second most famous TV destination in Los Angeles. I'm speaking, of course, of the Brady Bunch house. Just kidding. I'm actually speaking of 4616 Melrose Place, the titular fictional address of a garden apartment complex in LA featuring a group of 820-something people trying to get by in life any way they can. Oh, IMDb descriptions, thou art hilarious. In the premiere episode of Melrose Place, we meet the complex's denizens, wonder whatever happened to Amy Locane and the other Vanessa Williams, and follow Jake and Kelly on a date to Shooters. You'll need a round of Cuervo and a cucumber gel mask when you get a load of our visual aids, which you can see for this and every other episode of Again With This, regardless of show, on our website at againwiththis90210.com. For selected visual aids and other commentary, follow us on Twitter, that's awt90210.com. I am Scorned Woman Sweater Buying Spree, Sarah D. Bunting. I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Tower of Strength, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Birth Certificate Kerning Truther, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.